Welcome to Pitch Invasion, the day we've all been waiting for. It's a podcast for football tribalists, and every week we'll be trying to tell it like it is about African and European football. My name is Luazizi Gubu, and I'm not alone.
Yes, and I'm Xola Makwaza. I'll be the guy coming in two-footed in all the debates. And hopefully we can inform you guys and also see if we can also, you know, find a way to get on the same page on a few topics. Yeah. I know Luaz is a Chiefs fan. I'm a Pirates fan. United fan. I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm pretty sure you can see where this is going.
Well, you've got a Liverpool fan here, so.
Oh, no.
Shame.
I know.
That's it now. 20 years now with no title?
Yeah, I think I've been a Liverpool fan all my life, so, folks out there, Mecca Inyadike is my name, and, happy to be part of this show.
Well, it's actually good that we start talking about Premier League sides, because we're going to start with the Premier League, which gets underway in about a week's time. And we start right at the top. And I say top because that's where Jose Mourinho believes he should be. 3 years now into his contract at Manchester United, and still the very same issues that were there from year one are still there. Faith in the squad. Ola, your thoughts on that?
You know, I must be honest. I think we're seeing the beginning of the end of Jose Mourinho, yeah. To be honest with you. I think coming into the season, I'd assume that Man United would have cleaned out some of their problems from last season. Mm. Clearly, there's still the Martial problem. Jose said some stuff about Pogba, which was a bit misleading. There's still uncertainty on Luke Shaw. You know, whether he's staying, I see Damian's going, and I don't think Jose's has got it right with Manchester United. Yeah. I think Jose thought that Jose is coming to Manchester United as opposed to Jose, you are at Man United, home of the Red Devils. 18, 19 time, whatever champions.
20, get it right.
20, yep, all right. But I think Jose hasn't adjusted, and I think his arrogance, pride comes before the fall. Mm. We've seen the pride, and I think it's about time that the fall comes.
Jose will always be Jose, and you know, one thing we've seen with him, he's done 3 years at every club, and somehow manages to win something. With United, he hasn't done badly. You remember he came into a team that really struggled. Mm. And he's won the Europa Cup. He's qualified them back into the Champions League.
Oh, big deal, Amiga. They were winning Champions League. Yeah, before but the Europa League is tied coke to
the
them.
The thing with Jose is that he likes to buy players, and yeah. He's not getting that. And that's why he's kind of throwing everything out of the pram like some baby. But, you know, you got to give it to him. He is who he is, Jose Mourinho.
So do you think as a United fan, or United fans, should be happy with his progress at this stage?
From where they're coming from, I think that you know, he's done well. It's just that he's, you know, he can't stay away from drama. Mm. So it's all part of his arsenal.
Yeah. My question though, Mika, why take certain things public? Why go public with it? Okay, we know him and Martial, their issues there. We know the Pogba situation. We know the Luke Shaw situation. Does it help the brand? Does it help the team going public about this? Because you saw what happened with Pogba and his performances. Mm. Dipped. Martial even led to him missing the World Cup. Luke Shaw can't even get on the field. And I just wonder, in terms of the moral fiber for Manchester United, the brand, is that good?
Well, look, Manchester United knew what they were getting when they went for Mourinho.
Yeah.
United is a very iconic brand. They don't usually like those kind of things. But you see, Chelsea was like that before they got Mourinho. And he came in and announced that he was a special one. You know, created all the drama, but then he won. Which United, they were at the point where after Alex Ferguson left, they had, you know, two coaches who didn't help them. So yeah. They needed someone who would bring back something to them. And yes, you can talk about the brand. Yes, you can talk about, whatever. I think that he's, you know, he's just being Mourinho. For me, I know what to expect from Mourinho every season.
But don't you think, Amika, Chelsea and United are cut from, they're not cut from the same cloth.
Absolutely.
I understand that Chelsea's the new boy. They're despite having won the Champions League and Premier League, in terms of history, they are still the new boys. Manchester United, that's the Rolls Royce. Do you know what I mean? That's established. Mm. That's tradition. That's passion. And I'm not sure Mourinho has understood that he might have to diminish a bit of the old special one and just be part of something.
Yeah, but he is Jose Mourinho.
It's true. He is Jose Mourinho.
The point is, Mourinho cannot, if Mourinho suddenly is quiet, he's not making these statements. I mean, one of the most interesting things he's said now is trying to put pressure on Klopp and saying, you know, hey, you complain about buying Pogba and now all of a sudden you're spending so much money. But you see that Klopp understands what Mourinho's game is. He didn't try to respond to him in that same way. So, you know.
Here's my thing, and I think we're going to need to move on maybe to Chelsea as well. My thing with Mourinho is that he does need to change who he is. Purely because he's no longer the standard bearer. He does not set the standard anymore in world football. And I think, and this talking from a United point of view, as a big United fan, we are unfortunate in that we are stuck with him because I think that world football has moved on from his tactics. I think tactically he's been left behind by Pep Guardiola, by Jurgen Klopp.
Against Burnley.
You know what I mean? So he's been left behind.
What was his position last season?
Second, but
second isn't disguised, guys.
Let's be honest, it's in disguise, they were second, but they were miles behind. As a United fan,
at the end of the day, you know, when the chips are down, if you say, oh, as South Africa won the AFCON before, Bafana is not doing very well, but you remember that in 96,
what trophies did Man United win last season?
That kind of actually remember as a United fan.
Do you know what I mean? So that's what I'm trying to say with Manchester United. You know, they chased Moyes out right halfway into the season. And, you know, it's not that Moyes didn't do too well. He took over from Sir Alex. Okay. That was always going to be tough.
Let's not even bring that man into the picture. But we are going to move on because we can't take the whole day speaking about Jose Mourinho. But let's move on to Chelsea now. And the big question is, will the new man at the helm get a fair chance?
He hasn't won anything before. You know, and that's always the question, you know, because sometimes you want to ask why, if it's not damaged, why fix it?
Yeah.
I mean, Chelsea had Mourinho, he won the title. Next season, all sorts of problems, he got fired. Mm. Same thing with Conte. Conte comes in, he wins the title, he gets kicked out. And now you've got Sarri, who I think that, you know, he's a phenomenal coach. He did well with Napoli. They had a great season last season, but you know, Premier League comes with a lot of challenge, a lot of pressure. But you know, I spoke with Zola before he left here, and I knew he did mention he was going to Chelsea, and obviously I had to keep not mention it.
You can tell Amika all your secrets.
Yes,
keep them real tight.
No, you have to, otherwise you don't respect that. I like the fact that he brought in Zola, who knows the league and who also speaks much better English than he does. So I think we're going to see a much different Chelsea because Sarri likes to attack.
It's a very good point that you make, and I wanted to speak about that attacking side of things. He comes in where there's a number of issues that number of fires that he needs to put out first before anything really does happen. Thibaut Courtois, is he staying? Eden Hazard, is he staying? Ola, what do you think?
I think this is a very desperate season for Chelsea, and this season for me is going to say a lot, not about the players on the field, not about the coach, but the owner of Chelsea. Mm. I think Roman Abramovich is reaching that stage where it's getting close to expiry date for Chelsea.
Yeah.
Before, Abramovich was very involved with Chelsea. I mean, you saw him on the stands. He would come into the change rooms when players won big games. He would be vocal. Mm. And over the last year or so, couple of seasons maybe, it seems like his passion is diminishing. Where are the headline signings from Chelsea? Mm. You know, they had to spend, you know, they paid the king's ransom for Morata.
Yeah.
Having let Diego Costa go, you know, for, you know, not the value that I thought he was worth. And that hasn't worked out. Like you said, the Courtois situation, that squad is old. Mm. They didn't make the Champions League. Abramovich has personal problems within England being Russian. His visa coming into the new season. Yeah. You know, he had that sort of issue. And I think we're getting to that stage with Chelsea where Abramovich, I think, you know, he's looking at the clock and he's looking at himself and he's saying, you know what? I had my fun with this toy. I'm moving on. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at it going into the season. They had the Ancelottis, they had the Scolaris, the Conte, the Mourinhos.
Yeah.
Sarri to me is literally like taking your sister to the matric dance. They had no other option. They had no other option, right? They had no, Pep is at Man City. Oh, you're not going to bring Mourinho back. They had no other option.
Yeah.
No, but I think, they had no other option.
I think I better disagree with you.
They had no other option.
I better disagree with you. I mean, Sarri with Napoli, over the last two seasons has been, Napoli has been the one team that really pushed Juventus.
But Amika, your opening line was, he's won nothing.
I agree. I agree, I said that. But you see, when you come to Chelsea, you know that at Chelsea, you are expected to do one thing, which is win. If you don't win, you get fired. And that's why I said, you know, happy that he brought in,
Zola. Yeah.
There are a lot of players in Chelsea, like Eden Hazard wants to leave, Couture, we've heard about him probably going to Madrid. Willian is one of the most talked about.
There's another one, yes.
Most talked
about.
That's another one.
But, you know, he said something, about Willian when he was asked, 2 days ago. He said, I'm not going to say anything unless I speak to Willian. You know, I'm obviously not happy about what happened, but, you know, let's see how the, you know, the good thing about it is that we're practically a week away from the start of the Premier League.
Yeah.
And once hostilities start, everything gets into the back burner. And the beauty of this season is that the Premier League transfer ends on the 9th. So we're not going to wait a whole month.
But you see, that's where I'm getting to when I was saying Abramovich, is that usually Abramovich gets his business done early. He's there. He's in the back room and he's very involved. Of all the owners, right?
They do have Chelsea. See, and it's like Tottenham. Chelsea does have a very formidable, lineup. And in fact, I think Chelsea
but it's
has,
old, Amika.
No, not old.
That lineup
Chelsea
is old.
Has a bunch of young players out on loan that they can call on.
They've never been about that.
Well, they haven't, but you know,
they've never been about calling back.
It was part of their long-term plan. And don't forget that, you know, I went to London. Tottenham Stadium is ready and they're ready to move in.
Yeah.
The plan is for Chelsea to also build a new stadium.
But Amika, sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
Right. You brought up something interesting. They had players on loan. Can we just mention Lukaku, De Bruyne, Salah? Robin Loftus-Cheek now is on loan.
They do have more.
They've got more. Mm. But what I'm saying is that how many more of those mistakes are going to happen now? Because eventually, some of those players, they have to come back and you're going to sign them.
Mm.
But now, are those players going to play when you've signed Morata for 70 and you're paying him X amount? Are you going to take a gamble on a young player? So that's my problem, is that it's spiraling out of control at Chelsea. And what we're seeing right now, I think, is Abramovich kicking the butt.
They've done is to keep Kante. They've done it. They've offered him a new deal, and keeping Kante away from PSG, that's like a new signing.
Well, let's hope it is for Chelsea.
Yeah.
I still believe that they probably are going to be there and thereabout as well this season. Let's move on to your team, Liverpool Football Club, and the business that they've done, and how much more can we expect from Liverpool? Are they real title contenders this season? I'm going to start with you.
Yeah, what I'm happy about with Liverpool is, and call me a traditionalist, you know, I always felt that the only way Liverpool will get back to the top is by having a long-term plan, you know, and
20 years or so.
No, not 20 years. I think, you know, they got Klopp, who fits the very fiber of the club.
Yeah.
He's got the same kind of energy. He's got that passion that the fans look for, because Liverpool fans are usually very romantic. The one thing
they're always romantic.
Always, yes. The one thing that he's done, that Klopp has done, is he's never been in a hurry about, if he wants a particular player, even if it means it will take him 2 transfer windows to get that player, he will wait. And you've seen progress with him. Maybe they haven't won any trophies, but you know, in the last 3 seasons, they've got into the Europa League finals and lost. They got the Champions League last season, and they qualified for the Champions League, which means they found a bit of balance in terms of their revenue.
I find that strange. You say they qualified for the Champions League. Can we just remind our guests they finished 4th, right? Arsenal always take flack for qualifying for the Champions League, but Liverpool today somehow, you know, they're praised for getting to the Champions League. Look. Here's my issue with Liverpool, right, is, you know, I understand what you're saying, the long-term plan and going forward, but, you know, I think it's about time we actually start holding Klopp accountable now,
Right. That's a very good point.
I think it's about time. Well? The honeymoon phase is over.
You're sounding like Mourinho now.
The honeymoon phase is over.
I think Mourinho got to you.
We love the running around, the madman Klopp, but can we start holding Klopp accountable? Yes, he's been to the finals.
Here's a guy who was complaining about Mourinho just now.
You won silverware, not silver medals.
And now you're sounding like
him. Can he start lifting trophies? The other issue that I have is, why are you guys paying so much for players? How is it that over the years I've seen Liverpool, they forked out 30 odd for Carroll. Here's Van Dijk for 70. Here's Alisson for 60. And I'm seeing teams, Arsenal got Leno for what, 20 odd million, and he's one of the best keepers in the world. Could have even gone to the World Cup. Born Barca got Ter Stegen. No, obviously the climate was different, but nowhere near there. And I'm looking at Liverpool, Van Dijk, and 70 odd million. And when you start adding those numbers, that's why Mourinho brought this up. When you start adding those numbers and you're seeing, you know, losing finalists finishing fourth, you know, at some point, Klopp has to understand.
To get to the Champions League finals with the team that Liverpool had last season, it's pure magic, if you ask me. And if you say, you're talking about the price of players, it's determined by market forces.
I think this last year's Champions League team was better than the one in Istanbul.
No, market forces.
As a starting lineup.
Absolutely, I agree with you. But market forces determine the price of players. And the way it is right now.
Well, if you keep buying every player in Southampton, at some point they're going to say, we'll give you 70 million.
No, we went to Roma now. We moved to Roma
Let's quickly wrap up Liverpool by touching on the players that have been brought in.
Yes.
Are you happy with the quality?
I am very happy, especially Naby Keita.
Yeah.
You know, Klopp was better with one season.
Yeah.
To have him. Van Dijk was better with half a season to get him. And now he's gotten Fabinho who's, you know, what he's done is, he's gradually plugging all the holes.
He's got three Jordan Hendersons now. Fabinho, Keita, and Jordan Henderson.
Well, you can't say that. Keita, I think you don't understand Keita. Keita is a box to box player.
I think I can agree with that.
Yes, he's a
Keita
box-to-box
is
player.
Much better than
And I think Keita is even, in my opinion, is even a much better player than Conte is.
Ooh, that's a very big statement.
Mind you, Kante is on the list for the FIFA best player. I'm just saying.
Okay. We're gonna
wrap up Liverpool with that statement.
Yeah.
You heard it here first. Keita, he believes, is much better.
And the goalkeeper.
Mm.
The goalkeeper.
Tell me now he's better than Neuer or De Gea.
No, I'm saying that at least he's better than Karius, who cost them the championship.
No, look, any goalkeeper that was going to come in at Liverpool is better than what was there, as far as last season it was concerned. But we're going to move on now to the Emirates and,
Come on home.
So, Ola, this is, your strong point, your team.
Yes.
I want to hear what he says.
I'm going to start with the question that I asked, a couple of minutes ago. Quality wise, in terms of those that have come in, are they one good enough?
Manager.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm going to get to that as well. Are the players good enough? Two.
Absolutely.
Is the manager?
Absolutely.
Good enough?
Look, if we were in this World Cup, we would have won it as well. Just say that. That's how good our squad is.
Hola.
Look, I will say this. As an Arsenal fan, for the first time in a long time, right, we've actually signed players in positions of need, right? And we haven't faffed around shuffling our left back to play center back, our center mid to play right wing and so forth. We've bought players that were needed for the position and we've upgraded. We didn't just sign, we upgraded.
Okay.
That's a positive. And what I like with Unai Emery, what he's brought into the team from what I've seen so far in the preseason games is that we're scoring goals. Yeah. My problem again...
Who did you guys play against?
Hang on.
We'll come back to scoring goals.
We played against Blackburn Rovers.
No. We put five against PSG.
No, you beat Blackburn Rovers from Durban.
We put five against PSG. Calm down, right? We put five against PSG, right? What I like is that my problem with Arsenal, right, going forward, was that whenever we were playing at home, up only when we went down, that's when we needed to score. Right. And we looked threatening to score. We look like we're threatening to score every time we have the ball.
Okay.
We've got Smith Rowe, our 17-year-old. We've got Guendouzi in the middle holding it down. And you know that Aubameyang, Lacazette, you know, that combination is going to be deadly this season.
Yeah,
right? And for once, we have a holding midfield. I mean, Lucas Torreira had actually a really good World Cup.
Yeah.
And he's not the sort of Xhaka type of player who literally is running in and just head first into players. He's actually quite tactical. He breaks down a play and he's a very good passer of the ball, not just long passes, but short passes.
I think for me, he was one of the standout players in the World Cup. Mm. So I was quite surprised that Arsenal went for him, and I must say.
So then with him and Xhaka, do you play both of them or do you play one of them?
I think, you know, that's an interesting point you brought up, because was one of my criticism about Arsene Wenger was that, you know, we never really changed formation much. Right, and what I like with Unai Emery is that he's not afraid to change the scheme. You cannot approach every game with the same formation.
That's Wenger for you.
There you go. That was the problem. So at least now we have options, because I mean, can you imagine? Right, before our options was okay. If it didn't work out, you know, we'd have to shuffle Monreal at wide left wing and play three at the back and do all sorts of crazy things. Now we don't have to do that. We can change formation with the players that can play those skilled positions and not have to shuffle strikers into right wings, midfielders into our, you know, our wide.
At least you get Ozil now, who is going to face Arsenal and not Germany.
You know what?
I hope he's happy enough.
I hope the Mesut Ozil that we get is look, I think Mesut Ozil had a tough World Cup and he's had a tough couple of weeks after the World Cup. The fact that he cut his holiday short, you know, I think he's ready to roll his sleeves up and get to work. And I hope we see the best of him.
He's easily my favorite player in England, just because of the quality that he brings onto the pitch. And before we move on from Arsenal, I want to ask, in terms of the strongest Arsenal lineup you'd like to see start the season, because you've got a lot of attacking options, a lot of midfield options as well. There's still Aaron Ramsey that you can add into that picture. So who's playing midfield going forward? Who's starting?
I think our midfield is quite, it speaks for itself. You know, I still think you can have Aubameyang out wide, right?
Lacazette and Aubameyang starting.
Up front, Mkhitaryan on the other side, Ozil behind Lacazette. Mm-hmm. And you can have, you know, Torreira or Ramsey in there, or you can have a Xhaka and a Torreira or Ramsey in there, which
my boy, Alexi Iwobi.
You know what, Alex Iwobi, he's impressed in this preseason, I must say. And I think, you know, that's the other thing about having a new coach, right?
Where is Alex Iwobi in that?
He's impressed, but unfortunately, he's not going to start. But there is space for him. There is space for him should he improve. Mm-hmm. But I like what I'm seeing in preseason.
Okay. Well, that wraps up that Premier League segment. We're going to move swiftly along to local football. And by local, I mean the ABSA Premiership, which gets underway in a couple of hours, Saturday, the 4th of August. Let's start with Amakhosi Kaizer Chiefs making headlines towards the end of last season. Not great headlines, it has to be said. They promised an overhaul of the squad. Has that happened?
No.
Why hasn't it happened?
I think that Chiefs, you know, they should be, you know, right at the top of the pile, competing with Sundowns for players, for quality, and you know they've rather you know, stagnated, especially when they had. They had so much struggles trying to get rid of the former coach. Mm. You know, now they took so long, and then they get a coach, and there hasn't been enough time for them to try and get where they are.
Do you think they took too long with getting the coach?
I think they took too long, for whatever reason, parting ways with Steve Campbell, who, you know, make no mistake about it, he's a good coach, but I think that at the point that he lost his way at Chiefs, and maybe should have been out of the picture long before the end of the season. And that would have given them enough time to try and get players. But, you know, they've got Billiard.
Is he enough, though? Is Billiard enough?
They probably needed someone who will ignite them.
Yeah. My thing is this. Any team whose coach arrives the week of the season and the first game is against the defending champions, I don't know how that is any form of intelligence on their part, especially considering that, you know, they need to literally they need to hit the refresh button, Chiefs.
Sundowns also need to refresh, because they've been playing I think for two, we'll get to Sundowns
without a break now. We'll get to Sundowns, but
the burnout happened to Orlando Pirates as well, remember?
Yes, for me, Amika, yes. I mean, Chiefs, you know, they haven't actually pressed the reset button and said, okay, guys, we need a new plan, you know. And I'm still seeing players that have been here for the last 5, 6, you know, the Shabas are still there when the Zolinyan has moved on and so forth. And okay, Kunez looks like he's chained to Chiefs, so, you know, why let him go? Best goalkeeper in the country. But, you know, so I can understand that. But I think for me, you know, the coach comes in the week of the first season and they're playing Sundowns away from home. To me, that just tells me that this season already seems like it wasn't thought out.
But you know, you never know. One thing I like that he's done is he's put all the pressure on Sundowns by saying, but not promising anything. But, you know, you never know.
But look, I think to that point, it could be that, yes, he's putting the pressure on Sundowns, but he can also just read it as it seems. If he says, I can't promise anything, maybe that's because there's nothing for Chiefs to promise anyway.
They weren't exactly a bad team, even last season.
No, they finished
exactly
third.
Yeah, they weren't a bad team. It's just that, you know, I just feel like Chiefs can do better.
You know, but you know, so speaking, you feel they can or they can't.
I feel that they can do better because if there's any team in the country that has the resources, and has also the
pedigree, the
pedigree is one thing, but you know, to have the will to go ahead and do it, because it's one thing you can plan all you want to do, but just go out there and do it. And with Chiefs, I think they take too much time.
But that's the one thing I like going to see this season with Chiefs. The signing of Kama Bilyat for me was a massive coup, right? Because there were clubs overseas lining up for this guy. That's a massive coup and a big signing. I still think, you know, Kaizer Chiefs need to go back to their DNA, right? And I'm not even talking about the Chiefs of 5 years ago. I'm talking...
You were the one who was talking about Mourinho being out of...
No. A manager and a club are two different things, right? A manager and a club are two different things, right? They need to go back to their DNA, Kaizer Chiefs, right? Go back to the drawing board. And, you know, for me, when I grew up watching Kaizer Chiefs, you know, I used to see fast, skillful, lethal, and very precise at finishing, getting goals in the back of the net, right? Whether it was the Mbesuma days, the Jabulani days, you know, the Thabang Lebisi days. For me, when I think of Chiefs, I just think of flair, attacking, and just guys that are...
But the game has changed now.
The game has changed, Amika. The game has changed.
I'm trying to walk up. If there's one thing that
I think
South African football needs to address, it is, you know, has the game left South African football behind? Because you talk a lot about flair and what have you.
So are you saying that Chiefs, in this particular example, need to also adapt?
They need to, and I think that maybe this is the opportunity that they have. You know, for me, when they announced the coach, I was wondering, like, you know, Salinas who? You know, but until I watched the first game, and interestingly, they're going to play against Sundown, so there's no hiding place. You know, either they're going to get a hiding, or we will see that maybe he has a plan up his sleeve. The one thing though that I must say that this season I'm looking forward to is Pirates.
That's a very good point. Yeah. And I was actually going to make that point, especially with the Chiefs story, because as much as they finished third last season, it's one thing to finish third, it's another thing to finish third behind Sundowns and Pirates. And I feel as if Sundowns and Pirates are setting the standard at the moment, Pirates being the ones challenging the standard set by Sundowns, whereas Chiefs are still very much, you know, not really anywhere close to I think matching Pirates and Sundowns in squad quality. And again, I could be wrong, but I just feel, again, as a Chiefs fan, that I'm not confident, let me put it that way, going into the season. Not as confident as perhaps a Sundowns fan would be right now. And I say that because we are going to go into Sundowns a fair bit. They've just announced the signing of Mabue as well, who's joining the squad. We know that they want to beef up for the CAF Champions League. We know that they are...
They're like Chelsea. They have too many players. And I think the reason they haven't burnt out right now is just that Pizzo's been able to manage to integrate a few of the players. I mean, if you look at even Pesitao, he came out of nowhere into that team. So we've seen them over the last few years. However, when you play in Africa as regularly as they've done, you'll find that you know, Paris suffered from it. Their success in Africa meant that they didn't have proper preseason. They didn't have holidays.
It's been a story for about three seasons now.
So, can Sundowns keep up the momentum? That's the worry, and that's where I feel that like Pirates, they've got an edge this season because they finished very strong last season. They still have the coach, and you know, a few silent additions into that squad. Yeah. And,
well, I mean, let's not forget that they also have got CAF Champions League commitments this season coming up as well. So that's also going to be a big test for them. But well, as far as Sundowns are concerned, are they in a position where we can say they can defend their title?
You know what? I think of the last three seasons, you know, it would be foolish to doubt Sundowns, you know, be it continentally or locally. And the one thing I must say about Sundowns is that, you know, most people used to criticize them for having that big squad and signing almost, you know, it was like, did you need Libisi when you signed Manyisa? Did you need so-and-so?
Yeah,
and the truth is they actually do. I mean, you look at their CAF commitments, for example.
And they've got Charlie
now. And they've got Charlie now, you know. Gaston Serino now, who actually looked very good when I saw him in the CAF Champions League game the other day. You know, they actually do need that big squad.
They are struggling now. You can see that not having had enough rest.
I think
because the South African calendar
with the Champions League is not
aligned with Africa.
Yeah.
Puts the South African teams under real
every time.
And for a team like Sundowns, who you know is always going to be in that top part of the log where they have to have.
And I must say, you know, two seasons ago when they won that CAF Champions League, I thought they played the most incredible piece of football.
That was world class. That was world class. Barcelona should have come then.
Especially when they played away in North Africa.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, these boys were fearless. They took this game. I mean, I usually to travel all the way to Atteridgeville to watch Sundowns play, I usually would like, they won't do well in Africa, but I just watched one game on TV and I went to every single game because I saw a team that was
and
to play against North Africans in the treatment they get there.
Yeah. Most people actually don't know that, you know, when you play North Africa, right, it is definitely not the easiest.
Not just North Africa.
Right? It's really, really not easy. From trying to sleep in the hotel, right, to getting to the stadiums and having the green lasers flashing your eyes every second of the game, it's not easy. And what Sundowns for me have done that I think a lot of teams in South Africa can take a page from their book is that, listen, there's nothing wrong with rotating your squad, because the more guys you have playing and giving more guys game time, they get familiar to the situation and other players get rest. And that's where I think, you know, a lot of teams in South Africa suffer because they don't rotate their players enough.
I think they have to, the PSL and SAFA, they have to align the calendars with CAF.
Yeah. I mean,
Kevin Hunt was on that
very long
time. But if you don't do that, look, the human, you cannot play. It's like how players went to the World Cup and you see all the managers are saying, go on.
Sundowns players are Mika, right? The Sundowns players in the last 3 years, right? I think they've played a total of some 29 months of consecutive football. 29 months of consecutive football. 29 months.
Even the coaches suffered.
Mm. Yeah.
Because you need to go and refresh.
Mm. And I mean, Coach Peter Mosimane did mention something about taking a break towards the end of last season. You know, he was contemplating taking a break himself.
Yeah.
So that says a lot about the challenges that they've had to face. But I guess credit to them because they've embraced him, and so far they're doing a really good
and
job.
They're doing a fantastic job. To Pizzo as well, because you know, when he coached Bafana, and his career came to a point where it was almost like, you know, he didn't know what he was doing. But I think at Sundowns he's shown that, you know, he understands the modern game. And I think a lot of the clubs in South Africa need to begin to look inwards. We've seen with Benny McCarthy at Cape Town City. We need to look at some of these players and coaches who have international experience. And hopefully we will get a few more of them come back into the game. Maybe Stephen Pienaar will coach as well.
Benny McCarthy is
Bradley Carnell.
Bradley Carnell. Yeah.
So
some gremlins in the system, and it's okay. But it's fair point. Fair point on Coach Peter Mosimane, and may continue to raise the flag very high for local coaches as well. Well, a lot has been said, a lot has been touched on. We're gonna take some time now to replenish and refresh. Take a bit of a short break. We'll be back after this. Number one guru, Monster, Azuma, Lutz, Papaya.
what makes us better? Rivalry. This is the Absa Premiership.
Well, we move on now to some of the headlining matters that have sort of gripped and grabbed our attention over the past couple of months in world football. And starting with perhaps the biggest of them all, Cristiano Ronaldo is no longer at Real Madrid.
Who saw it coming? I don't know. I think most people thought he was going to go back to Manchester United because at the end of the day...
Did you hear his comment about why? Can I tell the world what he said? He said, I would have gone back to Man United, but I don't want to play right back.
Yes, so that's a dig at Jose Mourinho. Part of the excitement for me with him moving to Juventus is we've seen over the last few years that when players hit 30+, they seem to do well at AC Milan, Inter Milan, and especially Juventus. And in fact, they've actually got Bonucci back in Juventus and having Higuain go the other way around. So I think that, you know, Juventus for me probably the most consistent team outside of the Spanish and English teams, and not just how they won the league. 3 years ago, I went to the semi-finals of the UEFA Champions League at Santiago Bernabeu, and it was Real Madrid versus Juventus, and that's one of the best games I saw Pogba play. And they came into that game. It ended 1-1, but it was enough to see.
That was the one with Morata.
Yes, Real Madrid eliminated in that game. But when I saw them lose in the finals to Real Madrid, you saw that there was just that something was missing from Juventus. Yeah. They needed to have just that little edge, and maybe having Ronaldo kind of completes that team.
So perhaps you feel that's maybe probably the biggest reason why Juventus did go for Ronaldo is the fact that they've been in the Champions League final a number of times now in the past 3-4 seasons. Yes, haven't won it.
They won in 2015 and also 2017. Mm.
Haven't won it, so they need that edge to perhaps get back there.
I think, you know what, the Ronaldo signing, what it does to Juventus, it gives them a guy that's going to put the ball in the back of the net in games where they couldn't. Mm. It's as simple as that. Because if you look at Juventus, I mean, they had a great goalkeeper in Buffon and a great defense. Midfield was always quite a very good quality midfielder. Yeah. But as Amika said, it was those games where on a knife edge, where they just couldn't find it, you know, put in the back of the net. Mm. And what I like about Ronaldo coming to Juventus is that, you know, if you look at, like Amika said, the older players that usually come into Serie A, you know, Serie A is a lot slower and very tactical compared to the other leagues. Ronaldo, you know, is contrary to that.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be interesting to see how Juventus actually adapt to him. Because now, you know, whereas with Higuain, he was, you know, the slower player. He'd slow it down, have Dybala run around him and so forth. It's going to be interesting how they set up now. Because Ronaldo, you know, you want Ronaldo in the box, either behind the players or get that cross in early so he can get his head to it or finish.
Well, I mean, the Italians are the masters of counter-attacking football. Yeah. And that will suit him perfectly.
But because you say that Italians, within that Juve side, how many Italians are in there to play that type of football?
Well, I mean, they have enough. That's why they brought Bonucci back, because defensively, I think with Chiellini and Bonucci, they know themselves so well.
Yeah.
And you will see a bit more purpose this season, because Juventus last season really battled with Napoli.
To be honest, that's the only thing that was missing at Juventus was a potent finisher, right? And, you know, to add that piece, I wouldn't be shocked, right, if Juventus do get to the final. Winning it, depend who they play, obviously, but I wouldn't be shocked. They got to the semi-quarterfinals last year, right? And they were just a miracle, a bicycle kick.
They were really tremendous against Tottenham, because to come back the way they did, was a surprise. But I just feel like, you know, keeping Allegri, keeping the team, bringing back Bonucci.
Keeping Allegri was also key.
Yes.
Because
at the point, Allegri was almost going to go to
Chelsea.
Arsenal.
Even Arsenal.
So, we're going to see a lot more attention now shift also to Serie A.
Mm-hmm.
And I must tell you, in the 90s, Serie A was way ahead of the Premier League.
That's very true. That's very true.
And, I mean, I worked on the Supersport production of Serie A 10 years ago. one thing, Allegri used to coach Genoa at the time. One thing that has not changed about Serie A is just how the passion of the players from all the teams, whether you're playing against the top team or playing against the lower team, you find now that more and more people want to watch more games, not just Juventus, because of Ronaldo. And his impact is already there with sales of jerseys, merchandising, and now interest. People are going to be, you know, tuning in to watch more games. Someone at least said to me yesterday that, you know, who's going to be competing with Messi?
That's a very good question. That, and actually, no, I want to get your thoughts on that. Is there anyone that competes with Messi?
Ronaldo.
Does he compete? Are they on the same playing level, or is there one that is ahead of the other?
No,
for you?
I think that I think we were fortunate to have them both together, because one thing we've seen for a period of 10 years, the both went neck and neck.
Yeah.
And that's why you see, even with the Ballon d'Or and FIFA Player of the Year awards, they both won it equal number of times.
Yeah.
So this season is a chance to try and separate them on the play. And people always say, you know, well, Messi needs to go and try somewhere. Ronaldo has proven that he can do well in so many different leagues.
Yeah.
So
that's why for me, I still feel that, you know, it's the greatest sports rivalry of all time. Greatest sports rivalry of all time. I know people would like to throw the tennis rivalries, but that's if those two get to the final. These guys, even when they're not playing against each other, if Ronaldo scores 2 on Saturday, Messi will score 3 on Sunday, and vice versa the next weekend.
Yeah, maybe.
And, you know, if, well, Real Madrid have won 3 years in a row now, but
there
was a period where Barca won it,
there
were some, winning it, and
there
then...
There were some tennis rivalries.
You know, there were some tennis rivalries, but Amika, to be honest with you, the Messi, here's
how
deep.
When you say that, it almost sounds like it's an absolute.
I have struck a nerve.
There are fights at homes. There are fights on the streets because of these two.
Yeah.
And for me, what I like with their rivalry more than anything is that, you know, every week you'll be entertained by one or the other.
The one thing I can say is when I was a kid, there was a guy called Brian Pop Robson who scored like 200 and something goals in England. And I thought, how, you know, will anybody ever come close to scoring those number of goals? I mean, with Pele, his record is almost like some kind of fairy tale. So I used to go and find video tapes to watch some of his goals. But I think with Ronaldo and Messi, just having them scoring hat tricks, like for fun.
Yeah.
You know, really phenomenal. But to say that is the greatest sporting rivalry of all time.
I'll put my neck out.
You know, you can go basketball, you can go, there's so many.
There's plenty, but I think, you know, not agreeing with Paula that it is the greatest of all time. I'm not going to agree with you now in not agreeing with him, but I'm saying that I think he's got some fair points.
You can say
the greatest football rivalry, I'll agree with you, but don't say the greatest sporting rivalry.
Okay, we'll leave that there. We're going to stay with La Liga though. Does then the sale of Ronaldo to Juventus open the door for Barcelona to go and defend the La Liga crown, or even with Ronaldo, they would still be
favorites? Let's be clear on this. Barcelona have actually owned La Liga.
That's not a lie.
You know, even in that Ronaldo era.
Yeah.
Because I think Real Madrid have only won 2 La Liga
in the last 10 years.
Who cares? As long as they win. Real Madrid winning the Champions League really pours cold water on how many titles Madrid wins.
But here's the danger with that though. The danger with that is, I think it's sort of informed, I guess, modern culture, modern football culture, the fact that as long as I win the Champions League, I'm having a fine season.
What you need to understand is that there was an era where Real Madrid had won the Champions League like 7 times, Barcelona hadn't won even one.
Yeah.
You know, and until Johan Cruyff came into Barcelona, and then they won, in fact, prior to that time, I think it was 1889, 90, they lost, Real Madrid won, and then Barcelona got Stoichkov. And what happened with them was simply they changed their mentality because they used to be like Arsenal where they just entertained the play on, but then they had Stoichkov who was very temperamental. And then they won the title back to back three times and they ended up winning their first Champions League. And it would take them almost a lifetime before
that Ronaldinho 2006
with I think it was.
That was one of the most heartbreaking nights of my life.
Coach. And that changed their whole trajectory. So you find that once Barcelona started winning the Champions League, it changed the conversation because it was almost like, okay, we're catching up. And then suddenly Real Madrid explodes into this era where, I mean, this Ronaldo era can almost be likened to Alfredo Di Stefano's era in the 50s and 60s where they won.
But though, Amika, the Di Stefano era came with league titles as well.
And that's the basis of
it. It came with trebles as well.
That's the basis of my question, of the question that I did ask. So the fact that Real Madrid won three Champions League titles in a row, and within those 3 years, those three seasons, won one La Liga title. Where do we rank them? Do you rank them purely on the weight of the Champions League titles?
It's like the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
The reason why Manchester United cannot, yes, they can say that they're the most successful club in England.
Right.
The fact that Liverpool has more Champions League titles really puts a spanner on them. I mean, for you Arsenal fans, sometimes imagine that Aston Villa and Nottingham Forest.
Well, we're looking down on those clubs now.
Without spending too much time on this, I think what I'm trying to say is, We need to go back and have a look at that whole, you know, how we analyze that whole thing, because if there are teams that can still win the Champions League yet finish outside the top four in their country, you know, they we need to bring it back a bit.
You see,
it is the Holy Grail, but if there's still teams who can't finish in the top four in their own country yet still win the Champions League, perhaps we just need to maybe just try and balance it out a bit more.
You see, I'll be quick on this with Real and the Champions League, is that I think, and I've asked somebody from Madrid about this, funny enough, is that there's still that itching thing about them that, you know what, yeah, we're winning the Champions League, but we still can't beat Barcelona.
And that
has been something that's itching some of their fans. It's like, we are winning the Champions
clutch.
League. Mm. We Ronaldo scoring all these goals and we're setting records, but we still cannot beat Barcelona.
Yeah.
Well, the Champions League gives them a buffer.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah,
it does.
Try and compare them. Barcelona has won the Champions League 5 times.
Five, yeah.
And Real Madrid has won it 13 times. Mm. That's
a lifetime.
Yeah.
That's another lifetime for Barcelona.
But, you know, look, it is what it is. But as long as, I think I agree with Holland. I've also spoken to a number of people from Madrid about this. As long as there's this Barcelona clutch, this Barcelona thing that is on their back, they, as much as they're going to celebrate their titles, and look, they should celebrate their Champions League titles, 13 Champions League titles, 3 in a row in this climate,
by the way,
is fantastic.
By the way, Real Madrid also won, they won La Decima in the EuroLeague basketball.
The rivalry between
them extends also to basketball.
Absolutely.
So they won it, and Florentino Perez was going on about how they have dominated the two top spots in Europe. So
look, I guess if you've got the resources of Real Madrid, if you've got the history, it's no surprise if you are going on to dominate like that. So that's pretty much all we do have as far as the Ronaldo and Messi and Barcelona Real Madrid story is concerned. We're gonna try and find some of the other news that have been making headlines in world football over the past couple of months. I guess perhaps since that World Cup final that France did win.
For me, Shaqiri to Liverpool.
Big story that.
The fact that most clubs, you know, didn't think that, you know, he could do something. Mm. And, you know, this guy's been there. He's been in England now for Premier League for 3 years.
Mm.
And he showed in the World Cup just what great quality. And not only that, he gets on his first game for Liverpool and scores on a bicycle.
Against
Real Madrid. I think that I have a feeling that if he gets game time, because Mo Salah is still going to score goals.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets game time, he could prove just as good as Salah was last season for Liverpool. Maybe not in terms of goals, but his ability to assist.
Mm.
You know, I saw him set up a goal for Daniel Sturridge.
Mm.
People are underestimating Shaqiri.
Mm.
he is one player to look out for.
I think I agree with you. I agree with you. I think he wasted a number of years at Stoke, and I'm really surprised that no big team came and came knocking, and they probably would have gotten him for cheaper had they come knocking 2 seasons ago.
How much did they get him for? They got him for 13 million, and I think that's a steal.
It's very much a steal. He's a quality footballer, and he's definitely going to add a lot of quality to an already well-stocked attacking lineup.
Played for Inter Milan.
Yeah. No, it's a very good coup from Jurgen Klopp that I definitely agree.
I must say, Atletico Madrid made some interesting signings that, obviously every signing has been overshadowed by Ronaldo's signing, but Gelson Martins and the Thomas Lemar signing, I think those were really, really big signings.
The Lamar one shocked me.
What shocked me was the price, first of all, because Arsenal were quoted 70, 80, and they come and get 60. I don't understand how this works, but.
It's market forces. I told you when you come in about price. It's the time that, if you wait until last minute, at the time Lamar was, Arsenal wanted him a day before the end of the transfer
window. Yeah.
And that's what happened.
Because for me, when I look at Atletico Madrid, they were always, defensively they were good, midfield was good, but it was always an extra edge attacking-wise why they couldn't beat.
Yeah.
I mean, they went through that period where they had that, the Diego Costa Atletico, but there was MSN there.
Yes.
There was that Messi Neymar Suarez. And even before with the Falcao era, BBC had just started.
Yeah.
And, they just couldn't do anything against Barcelona with the David Villa and Messi and so forth. So they always lacked that extra edge on attack. So now that Griezmann has established himself, Diego Costa is Diego Costa. Mm. And I think Kevin Camara is still there. And you now add, Thomas Lemar and Gelson Martins, which Gelson Martins to me is a very interesting player. I really wanted him at Arsenal.
They got him.
Also, they got him cheap, because Sporting had problems.
Yeah.
Sporting fans, actually, at the last day of training, they ran onto the field and started beating up their players. And that's one of the reasons why Gelson Martins decided, enough of this, I wanted to cancel my contract. And, Atletico swooped in and got him on the back of that. And when I look at them, that defense is solid. Oblak is still there. They've retained their best players. I think they're going to make quite headlines this season.
Okay, let's move on to asking the question then. As far as the transfers are concerned, which of the big boys in world football, European football, still need to go into the market and strengthen ahead of the season?
To be honest with you, I'm very worried about Chelsea.
Mm.
And, what worries me about Chelsea was the same worry I had last year. Zappa Costa is there. Emerson is there. You've got Rudiger, Christensen, Cahill, David Luiz. And that's just the back four, right? And in the middle, Cesc Fabregas is still there. Bakayoko is still there. And all of that, it's a dark cloud. Hidden in there is a ray of sunshine in Hazard, Courtois, and Willian. And, is that enough for Chelsea to go forward?
If they don't lose any of those players, I think that once the league starts, transfer window is closed, players will buckle in and they will play. Chelsea's got a lot of quality in that team.
They finished
the season very well, you forget. They finished the season very well. They pushed Liverpool for that fourth place.
Mm.
For me, I think I was even surprised that they let Conte go because, his complaint was, just like Mourinho is, I'm not getting the players that I want.
Yeah.
So why don't you just give him the players and let him walk? But, people talk about, Tottenham hasn't signed anybody.
And they're losing a couple of players.
But what they've done is they're trying to pull a few of the players from their youth setup. And if you want to be realistic, some of the players, do you just buy players for the sake of buying players? I think that's one thing that Klopp proved over the last few seasons. He wouldn't buy, and then when he needed to, the first thing he did was he got the players that were in the team, to raise their game. And you found that certain players, Dejan Lovren was the most criticized player, but you saw
Amika,
playing the World Cup final.
For me with Chelsea, the fact that they've failed to reach Champions League twice in I think the last 3 years, right? That to me is an indicator that they need to press the reset button.
No, you're the one who is complaining about position.
I can already see this is going to be another debate.
This is a club that has the resources they're spending hundreds of millions a season.
Let's quickly touch on very shortly. Riyad Mahrez to Manchester City. Good move.
Oh, excellent.
Good move.
Excellent. A plus.
I think, you know, as an African, that's what you want to see.
Yeah.
And when you imagine that Mahrez was bought by Leicester for 500,000. This is a dream for every African child.
I hope they've got, there's a huge sell-on fee for Mahrez, cause.
There is always a sell-on fee. And that's something that even African teams don't take into cognizance. That's a phenomenal move.
I really do hope that Pep gives him, you know, the game time.
He will play ahead of Sterling.
That's for sure.
We'll see. Look, he's a better footballer than Sterling, but I think in the way that City play, I think Sterling works perfectly for them. With him on the one side, with Sané on the other side.
When he's in front of goal, he thinks...
Not a lie. Not
I don't
a
think,
lie.
I think he must be in the Guinness
well, look,
of America
look,
for the
I'm
most
I'm
scuffed
I'm
shots
I'm
that found the back of
fan,
the
yeah.
So there might be a bit of,
still better.
Yeah,
but fantastic.
You got 50 million with it.
We all agree. A fantastic move for Riyad Mahrez to Manchester City. And I'm sure he's really chomping at the bit to work with Pep Guardiola a bit further as well.
No, okay. I mean, but also if you look at it now with Mahrez, his move with Conte, Keita.
Yeah.
And with Salah, you got like the most expensive African players are all in the Premier League.
Yeah. That's it. And the good thing is that they're doing really well as well. And not just adding numbers.
We haven't talked about Percy Tau as well.
Perhaps it's perfect time for us to touch on him.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, the best player in South Africa over the past two seasons.
I honestly think the Percy Tau, I hope actually that it's a lightning rod to a lot of our players. You know, our players in South Africa tend to, I don't know why, they don't want to cross, you know, that bridge and go overseas and just go, you know, gamble on your own talent. Yes. Gamble on your own talent. Mm. And I like what Percy Tau's
done. And moving at the right time as well, because sometimes a player like Shaba, for instance, when he was really hot, especially that year before the World Cup, the Confed Cup, I thought both him and Kune. And I'll shock you, here's one that I think I spent a week in Cape Town when Nigeria played against South Africa and, you know, the goalkeeper for Pirates who died.
Senzo.
Yes. Senzo, we had a conversation, but I did write a blog after he died. Mm. And my entire conversation with him was simply, this is the right time for you to move to Europe. Mm. And I'm saying to him, like, he was saying, okay, but goalkeepers, I said, look, I gave him an example, I said, Vincent Enyama won the CAF Champions League twice with Enyimba, and then he moved to Israel. Mm. And from Israel, he moved to Israel. And I said to him, you know, whatever you do, you've taken your game to a point where for you to be the best in Africa, because at that point, Senzo was almost top. And I said to him, you know, this is the time that you should move. And then when I heard that morning that he'd been shot, and I kept saying to myself, like, you know, I wonder if he moved. This whole idea that you can be king here. Yeah, the clubs here are very good, but sometimes at the peak, you got to find that moment to move.
Yeah.
And I think Percy Tau, he might be loaned out, but we're going to see him inspire a lot of kids to try and take that leap.
Without a doubt. I think he's definitely going to make many more headlines over the next couple of years, hopefully playing in the Premiership and being a regular at Brighton as well. Okay, so we're going to move on to a segment we like to call Fantasy Premier League. And this is something that's very popular, of course, within the footballing circle, especially the one that is in England. I'm going to start with asking, which player for the upcoming season do you think is going to be the trump card for a lot of people, a lot of fantasy Premier League managers? Last season it was Mo Salah. He absolutely murdered it.
But initially, most people didn't give him a chance.
Exactly. No, that's true.
To be honest with you, tried and trusted. I think you, I still think you can't go wrong with Harry Kane. I know Harry Kane always takes about a month to get his, yeah, to find his groove.
Once he does get going.
Once he does find it. Who else is going to score the goals for Tottenham?
Yeah.
Who else is going to score the goals for Tottenham?
He's on penalties.
He's
probably going to take free kicks now as well.
Is Aguero going to start over Jesus?
Well, Aguero is still there.
Jesus just signed a new long-term deal.
Jesus in the World Cup was...
Aguero was not
as much as Pep and Aguero might not get along. Pep always knows that, you know what,
Aguero,
that man is going to get, he's going to win me matches. I don't think he's going to score, win me matches.
I'm still sticking with Kane.
I think Mo Salah.
Mo Salah.
Most people have questioned, you know, can he give you more goals? Look, Liverpool are not going to play differently.
Yeah.
And he still has Mane and
Firmino as well.
He will score goals.
Okay, so I mean, we've touched on the regulars.
Well, what's your pick? Who you got?
It's a very good question. That look, I can't look too far, you know, beyond Kane, Salah. I think if Hazard stays, he's also going to be there and about.
Also, this season will give you.
Here's my bolter, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang.
Yes.
I think he's going to be.
Yes, I agree.
He's going to be magic. He's going to score goals. He's going to assist because purely of the way that Arsenal plays. I think he's going to be one of the players to look out for. Moving on to the other side of that coin, the players that always promise too much but never deliver as far as fantasy is concerned.
Oh, there's a lot of them, right?
But give me one.
I honestly think Paul Pogba again.
Mm.
I think I don't know what's happened with Paul Pogba and Manchester United, but you know, I've killed so many a season, well, lost two seasons. Putting Pogba there,
he's the world champion.
I think Pogba's going to disappoint.
People were saying that when if England had won the World Cup, commentators would have been going, and there goes World Cup winner Raheem Sterling. Listen, Paul Pogba, even Mourinho knows that he has to change Pogba's role.
We can only hope he does do that.
If he comes back and wants to give Pogba a lot of work to do, what will happen is...
But Amika, I must say this, right? I will say this quickly, right? Two seasons ago, when Mourinho walks in and Pogba walks in, right? Pogba was opening the door, Mourinho was coming in. This season, it's Mourinho who has to open the door and Pogba's coming in. He's a World Cup winner.
Yep.
And he's got a chip on his shoulder. He's ready not only to prove Mourinho wrong, but he's ready to prove the world wrong.
Mm.
And is Mourinho ready to relinquish his pride and let Pogba run the show?
My question is simply, Didier Deschamps is as pragmatic as Mourinho.
Mm.
But that's why in his team, he was willing to let leave out Ribery, Benzema, and a few flair players. He was able to get Conte, Matuidi, and a few of the guys to do some of the tough work.
Yeah.
And he let Pogba free. And we saw that when you allow Pogba to be Pogba, he gives you the best. Juventus did that as well. I mentioned to you about the game I went to at the Santiago. Mourinho doesn't have a choice. If he doesn't do that, he's going to be fired.
What I don't understand is why from last season, 2017-2018 campaign, Mourinho still didn't see that. I think everyone else knew that if you allow Pogba to advance forward and do his work up there.
Even somebody that we haven't mentioned, Lukaku.
Mm.
We saw a different Lukaku in the World Cup.
Yeah.
Yes.
He reminded me of the old, I mean, I grew up watching a lot of these old tapes because I was fascinated with players like Alfredo Di Stefano, Bobby Charlton and so on. They call them the deep line center forward.
Mm.
I think what we saw with Lukaku in this World Cup, he was always going back.
And running with the ball.
He runs with the ball and then suddenly he's the one.
And at Man United, he's like a lamppost.
What we're all agreeing on is that it all starts and ends with Jose Mourinho and how he's going to use Pogba, how he's going to use Lukaku.
Maybe he would have watched the World Cup with a different eye to seeing, okay, these are my players.
And perhaps,
maybe I'm not using them well.
Perhaps the signing of Fred as well is going to release Pogba. You never know. Okay, so, Pogba, all eyes on you then to keep Guardiola. All the naysayers.
Stay away from Pogba.
Kevin De Bruyne is going to be magic in Fantasy Premier League. I agree with that
he'll
as well.
He'll be my team.
Yeah, yeah, but not Pogba.
Stay away from Pogba. I'll put Pogba as well.
Huh? Okay, all right.
Once bitten, twice shy.
Well, world champion does it. All those tags, they don't matter. When it comes to fantasy, it's the people who do the business week in,
Giroud's a world champion.
Out.
You got to put him on your fantasy.
Exactly. On that note...
Everyone said Giroud wasn't taking shots on target, but he's a world champion.
Not one shot on target. Olivier Giroud. Wow. Okay. Well, on that note, we are going to bring an end to the very first episode of Pitch Invasion. And it did take much longer than we expected it to, but hey, it's a football and there's a lot to talk about. But that's it for episode one. We did indeed have a lot of fun. From myself, Loazi Zikubu.
Hola, Makwaza.
Hey guys, you'll never walk alone this season.
Trust the Liverpool fan to just mess it all up. Well, that's it from all of us. We'll see you again next time.